Jules Evans says philosophy saved his life. Turns out that cognitive behavioral therapy, one of the most widely used psychotherapeutic treatments, was actually inspired by ancient Greek philosophy, something Jules says he discovered the hard way.
When I was a teenager, my friends and I did lots of drugs just for fun, including quite a lot of psychedelic drugs. And when I was about 17, I had a couple of bad trips on LSD, and they left me rather traumatized. So for about 6 years, I suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and panic attacks. But my real terror was that I'd kind of permanently damaged the chemistry in my brain, and there was nothing I could do about it. And then finally, when I was, I guess, 22, I went to a therapist, a kind of expensive private therapist in London, who diagnosed me as suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, social anxiety, and depression. I think he was being paid per diagnosis.
That's so I got quite a potent mix.
Yeah, and he wasn't actually able to cure me, but I researched those conditions on the internet and found that they could be helped by this type of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of now the most evidence-based form of therapy, and it's very popular.
So how did you go from CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, to discovering philosophy instead?
So I discovered that these emotional problems could be helped by cognitive behavioral therapy, and I found a support group, and that got me better. So then in 2007, I became fascinated by cognitive therapy, and I went to New York to interview the founder of CBT, Albert Ellis, and did what turned out sadly to be the last interview he ever gave before he died later that year. But I got to thank him for inventing this therapy and asked him where had it come from. And he told me he'd been inspired by his first great love, ancient Greek philosophy, and particularly this line from the Stoic philosopher Epictetus, men are disturbed not by events, but by their opinion about events. So in other words, it's not what happens to us that causes our emotions, good or bad. It's how we interpret what happens to us through our beliefs, through our attitudes, through our values. And that really got me interested in ancient philosophy. And I spent most of my 20s reading the ancient Greeks and Romans and discovering how incredibly accessible and practical they are.
Huh, that's fascinating. Well, so did the ancient philosophers actually think of philosophy as a source of healing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Epicurus said, empty is the argument that does not cure suffering. Cicero, the Roman politician and philosopher, said, there is a medical art for the soul, and its name is philosophy. Philosophy teaches us, he said, to be the doctors to ourselves.
It's so interesting that today, you know, if you feel depressed or anxious, you might think of visiting a therapist. You would never think of going to a philosopher. I mean, philosophy as a discipline seems to have left behind the practicality of the ancients and become a much more abstract medium.
That's right. So about a century ago, philosophy, ethics, and psychology were kind of one discipline. And it was kind of a tragedy in a way that psychology and philosophy split apart in about 1900 and became separate academic disciplines, jealously guarding their own respective territories. Because psychology ended up trying to become an evidence-based science, which meant it left out any questions of ethics, because you can't really scientifically test ethics. So psychology became a bit like a chicken without a head, whilst philosophy was all about speculative ethics, but without any real grounding in experimental psychology. It became just like a brain in a vat. So I'd say the two disciplines really need each other.
So if I was feeling bad, depressed, say, and had the opportunity to visit not a therapist, but a philosopher, maybe one of the ancient philosophers magically come back to life, what might he or she do? What would the treatment look like in practice?
Well, I don't know if they did one-on-one therapy, but I mean, usually you'd go to a class, say you go to one of Epictetus's classes, and often he would single out one of his students for some kind of philosophical examination. And ask them what kind of values they were living by and how that was making them feel. Epictetus thought that a lot of the time when we're suffering, when we're really upset or anxious or angry or frustrated, it's because we're fixating on things beyond our control. A lot of life is beyond our control. For example, if you put all of your self-esteem on looking great, your body and your looks are to some extent beyond your control. We're all getting older, we all get sick, and one day we're all going to die. So if you build your philosophy of the good life, if you think what's really important is your appearance, that's a recipe for feeling unhappy.
You mentioned the Stoics. We should be clear, this is Stoics with a capital S, not Stoics with a lowercase s, which simply means having a stiff upper lip. Who exactly were the Stoics, and what is it about their philosophy that you find most relevant today?
The Stoics with a capital S, they got their name because they were a group of philosophers in Athens. They first appeared about 100 years after Socrates' death in the 3rd century BC. They taught just in the streets. And what I love about their philosophy is how incredibly practical and accessible it is, and how well they understood the emotions and how to transform them, which might seem strange because, as you say, Stoic today means someone who basically denies or buries their emotions. So if you say the football coach was very Stoic after that defeat, you mean he doesn't really show how unhappy he was. But for the ancient Stoics, they weren't about just repressing emotions at all. They're actually about really understanding how your emotions arise and how you can transform them, not deny them, but transform them through kind of philosophical therapy. They were kind of the Buddhists of Western philosophy in that they had this idea of mindfulness, the importance of keeping track of your thoughts.
Jules, I know you now teach therapeutic or practical philosophy in all kinds of settings. You've taught professional sports teams, prisoners, people in assisted living homes. Yeah. What in general do you find is most appealing to people?
The idea, for example, of focusing on what you can control rather than obsessing over what you can't, to remain with an attitude of inner freedom, even in the face of real adversity. And that's why partly I think a lot of people in the army like the ancient philosophers. I interviewed someone in my book called Major Thomas Jarrett, who's a Green Beret, and he taught something called Stoic Warrior Resilience out in Baghdad. And he said to me, you know, your philosophy needs to work in all situations in life. Otherwise, it's just a cafe philosophy. It's just talk.
And what about the professional sports team?
Yeah, so I got invited to do a talk at Saracens Rugby Club, who are basically, well, they're one of the top two rugby teams in the country. And initially, I had no idea how it was going to go down. I started off by talking a bit about how I'd messed myself up on drugs, which felt, you know, being vulnerable in front of a room of 40 enormous rugby players was quite a strange experience. But to my surprise, they really liked it and asked me to come back. And I ended up running a course for the whole season and being a kind of philosopher in residence. And we had a kind of a regular philosophy club where you had about 12 or 15 of the players and the staff, including like some of the best players in the world. They would sit in a circle and bring in some of their own stories, some of their own reflections about coping with the pressures of professional sport on and off the pitch, because sure, they get paid a lot and they get a lot of adulation, but actually professional sports people, there's a lot in their life that is beyond their control. If they get injured as they're getting older, the transition from being a kind of weekend hero to 2 years later being a plumber, say, or unemployed, there's a huge amount of attention paid to professional sports people's bodies. But when it comes to the inner life, when it comes to the emotions, often it's just kind of flat out denial until a sports person breaks down or kind of has a drinking problem or depression or you know, which happens to top sports people. So Saracens is a bit of a kind of exception in that it actually creates spaces for these very tough rugby players to sit around and actually be open about their inner experience. And because it's philosophy rather than therapy, perhaps they don't feel like they're at the head shrink. So they feel prepared to do that. I think philosophy sometimes works better for men, because men are more comfortable talking about ideas than talking about their feelings. So if you teach them about some ideas which are actually connected to their feelings, that's a good way to get them talking about their inner life and their experiences.
Jules Evans lives in London. His book is called Philosophy for Life and Other Dangerous Situations.